Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and our Sunday morning services. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my delight to serve this reflective and compassionate congregation. You are welcome, whoever you are and however you are. You are welcome if the fall weather makes you smile with all the beautiful colors, or if the darker evenings are making you melancholy. Or both. You are welcome if Halloween is your favorite holiday and you can't believe you get to dress up in costumes and give away candy or eat candy. You are welcome if you are joyful and centered. You are welcome if you are anxious or sad. You are welcome whoever you love and whatever you do or whatever you did for a living. Each of you is a beloved child of this earth. And you are welcome here. If you are visiting with us and would like more information about how to engage in our community, please go to our website and write to our administrator and get on our email list. You'll get links to our coffee hour, learn about all the small groups you can join to really get to know people in this community. If you're part of this community already, I hope that you join us for coffee hour today. It's on Zoom, and it'll be good to see each other and share joys and sorrows and talk about the service. And everyone in this community, while we're not gathering in person on Sunday mornings, the best way to get to engage with people is to join small groups, teams, and committees. So I hope to see you there.
Let us light our chalice with these words from Wendell Berry. We clasp the hands of those who go before us and the hands of those who come after us, the larger circle of lovers whose hands are joined in a dance, and the larger circle of all creatures passing in and out of life, who move also in an advance to music so subtle and vast that no one hears it except in fragments. And join me now in our words of affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. The Little Ghost Who Was a Quilt. Once there was a little ghost who was a quilt.
He didn't know why he was a quilt. His mom and dad and all his friends were sheets. They were light as air. They flew high and fast and twirled and whirled in the sky. They could even ride on a gust of wind and then whoosh back down to the ground like they were going down an invisible slide. The little ghost who was a quilt was heavy because of his layers of fabric. It was hard for him to lift off, and he was a slow flyer. He got hot and sweaty when he tried to go faster. The only time he attempted to twirl and whirl, it didn't end well. One day, he and some friends were at a park when they heard someone coming. His friends zoomed away because ghosts are terrified of people. But the little ghost couldn't escape quickly enough. He flopped over a bench. A family came along, and a little boy who was eating an ice cream cone sat down beside him. The little ghost had never been so close to a human before, and he felt fear in every fiber of his fabric. The boy only stayed a few minutes, but he dropped a big blob of melted ice cream right onto the little ghost's face. Later, when some other ghosts saw him, they laughed at the stain on his forehead. The little ghost was embarrassed and also very sticky. The little ghost didn't like being different. His mom told him he had an ancestor who was a checkered tablecloth, and his great-grandmother was an elegant lace curtain. Everyone said she was the most beautiful ghost they'd ever seen. Even knowing that, the little ghost didn't feel any better. He wished he was just one fabric and not a whole bunch of squares sewn together. The other ghosts called him Scrappy, and he didn't like that. But there was one day that always cheered him up. Halloween! People seemed excited about ghosts on Halloween, and sometimes children dressed as them to trick-or-treat. Every year, the ghosts went to watch the festivities. They stayed silent and still in the trees and pretended to be decorations far away from the humans. Too heavy to hover, the little ghost who was a quilt usually draped himself over a clothesline. He never had a very good view. This year, he had a better plan. He remembered how close he had been to the boy at the park, so he decided he would be brave and fold himself over a chair on a porch, right at the center of the action. Halloween night came, and the little ghost flew as fast as he could. He was only halfway across the lawn when he heard people coming. At the last possible second, he flopped over the porch rail. A mom came walking up the driveway with a little girl dressed as a ballerina. While the little girl trick-or-treated, the mother asked the man at the door something. The next thing the little ghost knew, the mom had picked him up. He was so scared he thought his seams might come unstitched. The mom wrapped the little ghost around the girl and put them both in a wagon. The girl had been cold, and now the little ghost was keeping her warm. He could hardly believe what was happening. They headed down the street, past his friends in their tree. "No, no, don't go," his friends whispered. "What are you doing?" The little ghost decided to fly away as soon as the girl got out of the wagon to trick-or-treat again. But the mom didn't turn into the next yard or the one after that. By the time she finally walked up to a house, the little ghost was panicking. How would he get away? The mother parked the wagon and carried the girl and the little ghost into the house. The little ghost didn't know what to do. He reminded himself to stay calm and be brave. The little ghost peeked around the room. There were Halloween decorations everywhere. He even saw a branch trimmed with lollipop ghosts. They looked just like his friends in the tree. The little girl tucked the little ghost who was a quilt under her legs as she sorted her candy into piles. He felt surprisingly cozy. Maybe things would turn out okay after all. The girl ate a chocolate bar, and when she wiped her sticky fingers on the little ghost, he didn't even mind. After the little girl was asleep upstairs, the mom gently folded the little ghost, who was a quilt. She smiled and admired his fabrics and traced her finger along a line of his stitching. It tickled. She set the little ghost on the couch and went upstairs. When she was gone, he flew into the fireplace and out the chimney. His smile was 3 squares wide. The little ghost's friends cheered and rushed over to him. They were amazed by his courage and wanted to hear every detail of his adventure. They flew slowly along with him all the way home. The little ghost, who was a quilt, was so happy that he felt like he was floating without even trying. Everything that had happened was because he was a little bit different. Everything had happened because he was a quilt.
This is the time for meditation, reflection, or prayer, as is your tradition. This reflection is from Victoria Safford. Where do you go? Where do they go, do you think, when they die? Our mothers and brothers and lovers, grandfathers, colleagues, children, and friends. You turn your head and suddenly they have slipped away. But where? What's happened? How could we? How could they? What remains? I find myself telling a young child things I didn't know, I believe, about death, things that shock me, make me wonder. We come across a small dead turtle in the road, and we decide to bury it. So with a stick, we scrape a place in the edge of someone else's grass and put the little disc of shell in the hollow of the earth, and I tell what will happen to the turtle, to the muscle and the blood and the eyes and the shell. He loves this. It all goes back to the earth, I say, into new soil, and new plants will use it and grow, and bird will eat the plants, or we will, and the birds will scatter seeds, which turtles might eat. Round and round and round it goes. This much I know is true. But I also say, because clearly the child is wanting to hear more, clearly he knows that cannot be all. All the spirit of the turtle comes out and goes back into everything, into the stars and the sun and you and me. Everything the turtle was returns to everything that is and is not lost. We were both a little shocked at that, and pondering, we continued walking. The same child was told not long ago by a well-meaning relative that her dead cat, the relative's dead cat, is now happily in kitty heaven. And the fact is, though I roll my eyes and make derisive noises, I don't know now and never will whether kitty heaven is real or kitty hell, for that matter. The child and I and all the poets and philosophers, the scientists and scholars, are equal in our ignorance on this and equal in our expertise when someone asks, what will happen to the turtle or to us? Bowel and blood, bone, change into other things, dust and drop and molecule. But what about the soul? The heart is water and flesh. It decomposes fast or burns. But what of the heart's contents? What we know for sure when someone dies is loneliness. What we know is the lifelong struggle to remember. What we know beyond biology and chemistry, what we know forever and ever, are the questions. What remains of him, of her, of them? What remains of you in me?
A few years ago, I called my parents' landline. For those of you who might not know what that is, it's like a cell phone that can't leave your house. And heard my grandmother's voice on the other end of the line. You could have knocked me over with a feather. I immediately had both of my siblings call the number. They heard it too, which I guess was a good sign for me, but still very strange. It would have been less strange if she hadn't passed away a couple of years before this happened. You see, my grandmother, Linda Eller, was a force to be reckoned with. And even once she was no longer with us, she made her presence known. She was a powerful woman in a time when women were told not to be powerful. Born in the 1920s, she was constantly confounding expectations. In college, when she expressed an interest in majoring in geology, she was directed to the jobs available to women in those days, making a home, being a nurse, or teaching. So she did what she could and became a science teacher. She was always giving us geology-themed gifts. Although, when she gave my 14-year-old brother a real ice pick, which he used to chase me around the house, it was probably taking it a bit too far. She spent her career as an educator teaching science and helping future generations learn how to appreciate the natural world. Even when the world told her no, over and over and over again, she figured out how to find her place of belonging. For those early years of their marriage, she was an army wife, moving around the country with her husband's career. While living in Kansas, she was introduced to Unitarian Universalism, which at that point was just Unitarianism, and became deeply involved for the rest of her life. My grandmother believed deeply in our abilities to learn, grow, and evolve as people. She understood at her core that we all have inherent worth and dignity, and found her home in Unitarian Universalism. Against the odds for this little girl from rural Iowa, she fought to find her place in this world, and she found it with the people of our shared faith.
For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe. We are our grandmother's best. We are our grandfather's dreams. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are the pearls of courage and the pearls of time. We are daughters of dust and daughters of great. We're suckers of mercy and lovers of love. We are lovers of life and the builders of nations. We're suckers of truth and keepers of faith. We are makers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's best. We are grandfather's dreams. We are the birth of our ancestors. We are the spirit of God. For each child is born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe. For we are. For each child is born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe. For each child is born, the morning star rises and sings to the universe. So we are. For each child is born, the morning star rises and sings to the universe. So we are.
This month, our theme is cultivating relationships. Today, we remember our beloved dead and this is an opportunity to consider our relationships with our ancestors. So many cultures revere and cultivate relationships with ancestors. They ask their ancestors for support and care. They look to them for guidance through ritual and attention. Across the world, through time and now, so many people have sensed and felt their ancestors in their lives. And perhaps this is you. For many, this time of year, right around Halloween, between the fall and winter solstice, and the days before and after, it is a time to cultivate these relationships, to take out the photographs, to tell the stories, to eat the favorite foods and lay flowers on graves. Or perhaps you are a person who does not cultivate these relationships. If you are of a white European heritage like I am, we have a habit of letting ancestors slide out of memory as we rush independently toward the future. My great-grandmother, Carrie Ostring, who brought her 6-year-old sister across the Atlantic on a ship from Norway at age 18, would not speak Norwegian or discuss the old country with her children. It was as if that identity was dirty and she was washing it off in order to become American. She did not share her past or the past of her lineage. All her children had was a vague sense that she did not like her father, and that one reason she packed up her 6-year-old sister Olga and headed to the United States was because he married that woman after her mother died. Her only living child today, my great aunt, recently shared with my mother the story of their crossing to the United States. My great-grandmother was dreadfully ill, while her sister ran over the ship without supervision. We know nothing, though, of her mother or grandmother's or her life in Norway before she left. This feels like a common European-American story. People came and worked hard to become white, washed of all their previous identities. This great-grandmother was still alive when I was a very young child. I was terrified of her. She lived with my grandmother part of the year. She always sat in the same chair, hunched over and tiny, her hands bulging and curling in on themselves with arthritis. She rarely spoke, and the only memory I have of her speaking to me was asking me to call her Carrie. This horrified me. How could I call such an old person by their first name? She was quietly drunk most of the time, I understand now. The pain medications for arthritis were not what they are now, and alcohol was all she had. Carrie was truly a mighty, powerful woman. I mean, can you imagine at 18 years old, taking your 6-year-old sister, getting on a ship, crossing the Atlantic to the United States, with no way to ever reliably contact your family? They landed on Ellis Island, and then they traveled all the way to Montana, where they had aunts who raised Olga. Carrie worked hard to care for herself. She came here to Portland from Butte, where she was, for a while, and cleaned houses. She also homesteaded in Montana, north of Butte, for a while, so that didn't work out. She didn't marry until she was 30. Which at that time was an unheard-of old age. My great-grandfather was also from Norway, a youngest son who would not inherit the farm and so had no future. He came here and he mined in the Butte mines, even though he was a very talented woodcarver. Their first son, Johnny, was born too early, and the midwife wrapped him up and put him in the oven. He lived, but he had cerebral palsy and could not walk. Carrie was determined that her son would be educated. Each day she pulled him in a wagon a mile to school, and then she went and got him for lunch, and then back again for the afternoon, and then returned after school. When her next child was born, my precocious grandmother, she tied her to a chair during the long trips to and from the school. My grandmother remembered a hard and difficult childhood. Her sister, my great aunt, born years later, remembered a happy home filled with music and laughter. All of my great grandmother's children went to college, and Johnny became a librarian at a university. My great grandmother's story is so complicated, and so is my relationship with her now. I admire her ferocity and courage, and her commitment to her children's education. I'm troubled by the colonial spirit, the one where Europeans just could come here when things weren't working out in their own country, taking the land of people who had been killed by genocide without even noticing what they were doing. I find it disturbing how she made herself a blank slate for the culture of this new place. Her commitment to her son, disabled in a way that could have made it impossible for him to shine, was extraordinary and gave him a full and meaningful life. I knew him when I was young, and he was a very funny, smart man. My great aunt bubbles with a joy infused in her partly by her mother. The trauma my great grandmother inflicted on my grandmother affects my family to this very day. I imagine the stories you know of you and your ancestors are similar. The story I tell about my great grandmother is my family's history. But the story is so much more than words on a page. An interesting story about a strong pioneer Norwegian woman who breathed in American white supremacist culture and was not able to get the help she needed, so she did not have to tie her preschooler to a chair in order to educate her son. It is a story that lives in my DNA and in the synapses of my brain and in my children's bodies as well. We know DNA flips switches on and off different characteristics based on experience. And these switched DNAs could be passed on to our children. Experiences create ways of being in a family that shape how we engage in that family with the world. Our ancestors' gifts, successes, joys, and their trauma and suffering all live in us. And we need relationships with these people. Maybe our great-great-grandmother was a quilt or a laced tablecloth, just like we are. And we might not feel so alone in our family to know that others were more like us. Maybe our family has talents that we can share proudly. Maybe trauma and pain keep reproducing through the generations, and we can finally acknowledge, heal, and bring peace to the past so our family can flourish more fully in the future. History, our family's history or our culture's history, is never just a story told and dead. History lives and is acted out in the present. When we relate to it, we have the possibilities of changing it. Our ancestors are alive. Some people feel them, literally, and talk to them, and create rituals of remembrance. Others don't think about them much and dismiss the idea that you could have a relationship with a dead person. Whatever your current experience of your ancestors is, they do live in our bodies. And that is just science. My dad and I, we have identical big toes. I sometimes wonder who else over the centuries had this toe. What were their lives like? What was wonderful, challenging, and impossible in those lives? Who did they love? Were they allowed to express that love? How did they make meaning of the life they were given? Ancestors live in our brains and our bodies. And they help us know how we react to life. They live in the family systems we grew up in and raised our own families in. This moment, this time of year, right around Halloween, is when the veil between the living and dead is very thin, many cultures say. It is a time to remember our beloved dead and our ancestors, and perhaps pull out a photo, and have a cup of tea with them to remember and to learn and to heal. It is also a time to pass our ancestors on to our children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. Maybe you don't know anything about your great-great-great-grandmother, but there is no reason future generations can't know theirs. May it be so, and amen.
We share these words from the Reverend Mark Bellatini. Some of us remember with pleasure aunts, uncles, fathers, mothers, friends and lovers, cousins and neighbors, other times and other places, cities and farms, homesteads and rooms, yellow sunsets, chilly sunrises. Some of us find it hard to remember, for the memories that clamor inside us are jagged, like glass we ourselves did not break. Some of us remember people we have never met, but who, through history, recent events, book and poem, and film and painting, have met us and entered the secret chambers of our heart. Some of us remember children and cannot be comforted. Some of us remember and are set free in our thanksgiving. Some of us remember and are tight with guilt or shame. Some of us struggle daily to remember with greater charity. Some of us weep easily and often. Others weep rarely, but grieve all the same. Some of us are stoic and say, these things happen. Some of us rail against the unfairness of it all and clench teeth and fists with discontent. Some of us bear the burden of those who took their own lives or who suffered greatly at the end. Others among us remember only vast meadows of love and charity in which we played with joy. But all of us remember. Whether we speak or are silent, whether we deny or affirm, whether we love or find it hard to love, may the power of love embrace us all as the curtains between then and now are drawn open for a moment, and the fullness of life impresses itself on us, each in our own way.
Dum 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 dum.
I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. I am sitting here wanting memories to teach me to see the beauty in the world through my own eyes. You used to rock me in the cradle of your arms. You said you'd hold me till the pains of life were gone. You said you'd comfort me in times like these, and now I need you, now I need you.
Our benediction words are from Judith Anderson. Remember us, you who are living. Restore us. Renew us. Speak for our silence. Continue our work. Bless the breath of life. Sing of hidden patterns. Weave the web of peace. I will now extinguish our chalice, but not the compassion and inspiration of our faith, or our commitment to its principles. These we will carry until we meet again.